So I have a question for you. Have you ever been having a conversation with someone, listening to someone maybe, and while that's happening, you're having another conversation in your head? It could be something they said made you think of your grocery list. It could be that you're actually really engaged with them, and now you have thought of something to share with them. I have to tell you that when I'm up here preaching or teaching, that is often happening. Sometimes it happens because of the weird things that come out of my mouth, the words I don't say right, and then I have a whole internal conversation going on. Sometimes it happens, I look out and I'm like, oh, they have a really nice outfit on today. Random. Sometimes you look, you make funny expressions. You may not realize that some of you look bored, some of you look like you have indigestion, some of you look like you agree and you're really into it. Others of you look like sometimes you disagree. And so then in my head, there's a whole nother conversation going on, right? And we saw how important, though, this back and forth is during the pandemic. See, what we're doing here today is not a solo act. And it is not you just observing. It is a participant act. And we found this out during the pandemic. During the pandemic, when we were still part of Grace Point, we would do the sermons online. And so I would go over to the Grace Point campus in Owosso, and Wes and I would take turns speaking. And you would be preaching to no one. In fact, they eventually put out some of the puppets that they had found back in the children's area from back in the day, because it is weird. You have the person that is filming you, but that person is listening in a very different way than you all are listening, right? They're listening for errors. They're listening for, is this camera angle right? Does this make sense, what's happening on the stage? It's a very different thing. And it was different for people at home to listen. This is a community act. And I bring this up because I think maybe this is part of what is happening in John chapter 10. If you remember, we were there last week. And one of the things that I told you is when you read the Gospel of John, you begin to see a pattern show up. You see that there is a sign, something happens, Jesus does some miracle, he performs some amazing feat. There is then a discussion about it, right? There's some kind of a question or a comment or something that people aren't sure about or brings disagreement. So there's this discussion. And then it's followed by a discourse. Jesus begins to teach. And so you have sign, discussion, and a discourse by Jesus. And if we're not careful, if we separate out what Jesus said from everything that's happened before, we can miss some things. And so last week we looked at John chapter 10, where Jesus said that he was the door. He was the gate by which we are saved. And through him, I argued that salvation is bigger than we can imagine. It's better than we can imagine, because Jesus said, not only are we saved, but you can come in and you can go out and you will have good pasture. But I said it's very much connected to the story of the man in John chapter 9 who was healed. So real quick, we're going to do a quick recap. Disciples are walking along in John chapter 9. They see a blind man. They want to know who caused him to be blind. Was it his sin or his parents' sin, right? And that seems really like small-minded to us, right? Because we have all this medical advancement. But let's be honest. This is human nature. We generally want to know why people are in the state they're in. Have you ever been sick? Have you dealt with a chronic illness? If someone has ever died earlier than you thought they should, this is a question. Why? What did I do wrong? What could I have done differently, right? We want to know why. And so they want to know why. And Jesus says, well, it's not any of that. God's glory is about to be seen. And Jesus steps in, spits in the mud, puts it on his eyes. The man is healed. He takes up his mat and he goes on about his life. And then the religious leaders, the Pharisees, they see him. And he's walking around carrying his mat. And they get upset by this, which again, we look at them and say, oh my gosh, can you believe them? But this is human nature. They were supposed to help people know what was the correct way to follow God and what was sin. And here was this man carrying his mat, doing labor, working on the day that is holy, the Sabbath. And you were not supposed to do any work. And so they begin to question him. And there is this pretty intense interrogation that takes place. But they want to know at the end of the day, who healed you? And he doesn't know. They say, well, is it of God? And they're like, well, the man says, I think it's a prophet. And this angers them. They get more and more upset by this. And the man's like, look, I don't know what to tell you. What I can tell you is I was blind, but now I see. And he's like, so I don't know what to tell you. And they get so angry with him that they tell him, you were born a sinner. The exact opposite of what Jesus said was true about him. And they go and they kick him out of the synagogue. And then Jesus hears about this. He finds him. He reveals who he is to this man. And again, he says, this is what I've come to do. I've come to give blind, render judgment. He says, I've come to give sight to the blind and those who think they see, to point out that they're blind. And again, the religious teachers are like, excuse me, that's a passive aggressive comment. What are you saying? Right? And so Jesus begins to expound that if you understood who I am, that I am the gate by which you are saved. And this is where then in John chapter 10, I have to wonder if Jesus isn't participating in some community speaking. All right? So in the ancient Jewish tradition, rabbis often would say kind of crazy things to elicit a response from somebody, to get them to think in a new and a different way. They would often ask questions because the relationship between rabbi and teachers was just as important as the actual teaching. And so I imagine Jesus says all these wonderful things about being the gate and how through him they're saved and they're going to have good pastures. And I imagine there are people hearing and he's seeing the look on their face and some of them are going, yeah, just because you say so. I mean, they're not saying it, but you know that face, you're like, okay, right? Others would have been like, okay, I want to believe. You've like healed the blind man. But you pointed out there's been tons of thieves and robbers before you. Lots of people have said they're from God. So like, how do I know? I imagine Jesus then in response to some of those looks he's getting back, Jesus has this to say. He says in John 10, verse 14, he says, I am the good shepherd. I know my own sheep and they know me, just as my Father knows me and I know the Father. Sorry, I messed up. This is a day for messing up. We're going to go back. Verse 11 is where I needed to start. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd sacrifices his life for the sheep. A hired hand will run when he sees a wolf coming. He will abandon the sheep because they don't belong to him, and he isn't their shepherd. And so the wolf will attack them and scatter the flocks. But the hired hand runs away because he's working only for money and doesn't really care about the sheep. Jesus says, I'm the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and they know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. So I sacrifice my life for the sheep. I have other sheep too, that are not in this sheep fold. I must bring them in also. They will listen to my voice, and they will be one flock with one shepherd. The Father loves me because I sacrifice my life so I may take it back again. No one can take my life from me. I sacrifice it voluntarily, for I have the authority to lay it down when I want, and also to take it up again, for this is what my Father commanded. Jesus' claim here is very simply, I am the good shepherd. He's been using this analogy of sheep. They would have been familiar with this, of how sheep are, who they are, how they live, how shepherds take care of them. And so he continues this, and he says, I'm the good shepherd. But I have a question. What is it that makes Jesus a good shepherd? He doesn't just say, I'm a shepherd. He says, I'm the good shepherd. And if I were in that crowd, I would be going, okay, but what makes you good? And I think Jesus is like, yeah, okay, Jessica, let me tell you. Let me start with this. I'm the good shepherd. I will sacrifice my life for my sheep. He says, a hired hand is going to run. Jesus begins to compare himself to the hired hand, to someone who is paid to take care of the animals versus the one who owns them, who knows them, who is ultimately responsible for them. And he says, when trouble comes, a hired hand is going to do a cost analysis. He's going to look at the situation and he's going to say, yeah, my life or a dumb animal? How much I get paid? Never mind, see you later, right? But he says, I'm not going to do that because I am committed. Jesus says, I'm good because I have made a commitment to my sheep. I'm invested in them. I'm not going anywhere. When trouble comes, I'm not hightailing it out of here. I'm sticking with them. I am committed. And then Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. I know my own sheep and they know me. He says, this is personal. These aren't just some random sheep that I'm taking care of. I know each and every one of these sheep. And they know me. I'm the good shepherd because I have taken the time to know my sheep. This makes me think of in Luke, Jesus talks about the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost son. And he talks about the sheep. He says, how many of you who have 100 sheep and you pull them in for the night and you find there's 99 will not go out and look for that one? A hired hand would, and a hired hand would say, look, we got 99, what's one? Yes, it's a loss, but you still have 99. But here's the thing, a shepherd knows which sheep is missing. The shepherd knows that that's Daisy. Oh, stupid Daisy that's missing. She always likes to smell those stupid roses. She gets caught up in the brambles. She can't hear, and she's got the bad leg, and she's got some ADHD. If we leave her out there, she's in trouble because he knows which one is gone. And so he goes and he seeks out not just any old sheep, but he's seeking out Daisy, and he's bringing her back in. This is personal. There's an image that's often used throughout scripture when you talk about the shepherd. We're probably most familiar with it in Psalms 23. And it's the statement, the psalmist says, that his rod and his staff, they comfort me. We use that idea of rod so often as discipline. And yet the shepherd rarely used the rod to discipline his sheep. He used it to fight off hand-to-hand combat with animals that tried to come in and take his sheep. And the other thing he would do is that the shepherd would spend nights, weeks, out in the pasture with these animals. And as their fur would grow, he would need to inspect them. I don't know if you've ever heard a sermon series on sheep, which sounds weird, but we did one on Psalms 23. Sheep get really sick, really easy, really fast. And they get themselves into constant problems. And so the shepherd would take that sheep and do regular routine checks. And he would take that rod and he would use it to lift up a lot of that fur and then get his hands under there and inspect that sheep. And you can imagine the shepherd talking to the sheep as he does this. That's how they got acquainted. That's how he knew their voice and they knew his. He knew the shape of their very body. This is personal. That's why he's the good shepherd. And then he says, I sacrifice my life. The shepherd is willing to love in a way that is sacrificial. He is willing to lose his life so that those sheep can be saved. Now, there's lots of images in the New Testament to try to help us understand what happens on the cross. And this has been debated for thousands of years. But whatever happens on the cross can be summed up, I think, best like this. God says, there's a problem, and I have to solve it because you people are sheep, and I love you, but you can't. So I'm going to let the world, all this stuff, because people have resisted partnering me with you, throw the best at me, and somehow through my death and the shedding of my blood, I am going to rip apart the chaos that has come into the world, and I'm going to defeat sin and death, and I'm going to empower you through my resurrection. And I'm willing to do that because I love you. I'm a good, good shepherd. And because he is a good shepherd, then you and I can be secure. I can say, I am secure. As I prepared for this message, I kept going back to this idea that I can trust him, and I can rest in that trust, and I can be secure. I think about so often in my own life when I give in to sin. Not always, but often when I give in to sin, I have revealed an insecurity. And I don't necessarily mean an insecurity about me, but something has caused me to feel unstable, unsure about life. When I act out of woundedness and hurt, not always, but often, something has threatened my sense of stability and security, my sense of self, my sense of being able to take care of myself and those around me. When I think about the things we do that they aren't, I didn't commit a sin, right? We call these sins of commission. You did something wrong. But I didn't do what I was supposed to do. I didn't do what was right. Sins of omission. I didn't stand up. I didn't interject. I didn't live a generous life. It's often because I have lived from a scarcity mindset that I have to hold on to what is mine. I have to hold on to my sense of justice, my sense of whatever, because if I don't, I'm going to lose. I'm not secure. We start worrying about what people think. We start worrying about whether there will be finances. And I want you to hear me. These are all legit concerns. The problem isn't that we have to think about these things and have these legit concerns. The problem becomes when we knee-jerk react rather than stopping and saying, am I acting out of an actual need? Or am I making a decision out of this fear, this sense of lack, this sense of insecurity? And then rooting myself in who Jesus says I am, in his love, in that there is nothing that can happen to us in this life that will remove his love from me. And you say, why does this matter so much? If you just go over three chapters to John chapter 13, you will see Jesus at the Last Supper. He's getting ready to wash the disciples' feet. And I'll put this up on the screen. And it says that Jesus knew in verses 4 and 5 that the Father had given him authority over everything and that he had come from God and he would return to God. So he got up from the table. He took off his robe. He wrapped a towel around his waist. He poured water into a basin. And then he began to wash the disciples' feet, drying them with the towel he had around them. If you're familiar with this, you will know the disciples get really upset by this, because this was a job that was reserved for a servant. And yet, no servant had done it, and it needed done. And the last person on the earth that would do it is your rabbi, someone of status. And yet, this is exactly what he does. He lowers himself to the place of a servant, gets out his disciples' nasty, sweaty, dusty feet, and cleans them. This is why I love English, though. In verse 15, it says, so. That is a coordinating conjunction. I'm learning that with Zoe. So, that means that whatever is about to come is absolutely connected with what came before. And it is because Jesus was secure in who he was. He knew that the Father had given him authority. The Father had loved him. He knew what was to come, both the good and the glorious. Both the awful pain. And he said, out of this knowing who I am, the security that I have, and the Father who is good, I can then lower myself and be a servant. I can engage with those before me because I am secure in my Father who is good. And you and I have been called to go out into our workplaces, into our families, into our communities, like Jesus. Jesus tells his disciples that as I was sent, so I am sending you. You and I are called. In fact, in 2 Corinthians 5, verse 20, Paul writes this. He says, we are Christ ambassadors. God is making his appeal through us. So we speak for Christ when we plead, come back to Christ. You and I have been given the task to tell other people about the Good Shepherd. We are his representatives. We are his ambassadors. And if I'm honest, my biggest critique of the church would be, church as in like the whole church, is that the message that we have given is one of fear and destruction, opposite and antithetical to what Jesus says. Jesus says, I have a vision that is so much bigger than what you think. We need to give people the compelling vision that Jesus has given. And what do I mean by that? You and I, because we are sent as he is to be sent, we therefore need to be committed to the flourishing of others. Just as Jesus, the Good Shepherd, was committed to us, you and I need to be committed to the flourishing of others. It's why we do Gamers Guild. People need to not be isolated. It's why we give out food. It's why we do prayer. It's why we do midweek. Everything we do is so that we can flourish and the people around us can also flourish. And then we are to know others. We are to take the time to do what Jesus did, get to know others. Now again, research is showing us you can't know everybody and you can't be all things to all people. So we're going to need wisdom here. But part of the flourishing, part of what God has for us, part of that being a good shepherd is that intimacy. It means being vulnerable with people. It means investing in others. It means giving of your time and your resources to others. It means letting other people help you. Because some of us are really good with the helping, not so good with the being helped. Because that makes us vulnerable. But Jesus says, that is what it is. You're sheep. You're sheep. Accept it. Embrace it. We are the dumb animals. We're beautiful and social creatures. And then just like Jesus was willing to sacrifice, you and I are to love sacrificially. And again, we need to use wisdom. This has often been used to say, oh, I should just let people walk all over me. Jesus never let anybody walk all over him. But he did love sacrificially. We need to be willing to love sacrificially. And I think sometimes we get tripped up because when it comes time to love in a sacrificial way, we get scared and we pull in, forgetting that we have a good shepherd who will not abandon us, who will not leave us, who is committed to us, that even if we're struggling, he will struggle right alongside us. Because he's the good shepherd, you and I can be secure. So I go back to then, if it's connected, this whole discussion about being the good shepherd and the gate is connected to the healing of the blind man. I go back and I look, what's interesting to me, toward the end of chapter 10, right in the middle actually, chapter 19, everyone hears what Jesus is saying. It says some people were divided in their opinion about him. Some said he is demon-possessed and out of his mind. Why listen to a man like that? And others says, this doesn't sound like a man possessed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind? So I go back to that blind man, and what is fascinating to me is found in chapter 9, verse 35. Man has just been gaslit. He's been told, you had an experience. You were blind, and now you see, but that was not a prophet of God. What you experienced was not legit. In fact, not only is it not legit, but you were born a sinner. You've always been a sinner. And they throw him out of the synagogue. And it says that when Jesus heard what had happened, he found the man. And he asked, do you believe in the Son of Man? Reference to the Messiah, the anointed one. And the man answers, who is he, sir? Because I want to believe in him. And Jesus says, you have seen him. He is I speaking to you. And the man replied, yes, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped Jesus. What an example of what we've talked about. The man has been tossed aside by the religious leaders. The Pharisees and the Sadducees might be like us evangelicals and mainline denominations, right? We are the ones who know. And they've kicked him out. Can you imagine what that would have felt like? To have finally been able to see and then to be told, you don't know what you're talking about. And Jesus goes out of his way to find this man. Reassure him, you ain't crazy. And reveal to him personally who he is. Because Jesus was committed to this man, and he knew this man. And Jesus does this at risk to himself, because if you're reading along, as we've encouraged you to do in the reading plan in John, you are going to see Jesus is constantly battling with the religious leaders. And every time he does, the mark on his back gets bigger and bigger. And yet he says, I'm going to go to where this man is, and I'm going to reveal myself to him. And what that reminds me is not only does he love us, not only is he committed to us, not only is he willing to sacrifice for us, but that us includes people we would possibly exclude. Jesus tells those listening, he says, I have other sheep that are not in this sheepfold, and I must bring them also. He's speaking to a predominantly Jewish group of people. They were the chosen ones. Yeah, God was going to, you know, save the whole world, but ultimately they were the chosen ones. And they'd already, these original religious leaders had already determined that, you know, blind guy, you out. And Jesus says, there are other sheep you don't know about that I'm going to bring in, and we're going to be one flock. You and I don't have to be part of the flock. And you and I can choose to be part of the flock, and we can choose to say never mind and go back out. But what we can't do is ever get away from the invitation and the love. Jesus says, come to me. If you want to be part of the flock, you get to come in. And guess what? At the end of the day, no religious elite person gets to determine who is in the flock. Christ alone gets to determine who is in his flock. He came for all, and he is the good shepherd. And so because he is the good shepherd, you and I can engage in this world. We can go out and love our neighbors. We can go out and deal with our sin. We can go out and risk things like forgiveness, turning the other cheek, standing up for what is right, because we rest secure in a shepherd who is good. To end, I'd like to actually use a prayer that I found, a written prayer online. And so I'm going to ask you to stand and join me in prayer, and then we will continue in worship. Lord Jesus, you are the good shepherd who lays down your life for your sheep. O great Savior, there is no one like you. No one is good and loving and powerful. In your great love, you know the depths of each of your children. You not only name and remember each of us, but you study our essences. You wove our personalities into unique canvases of beauty. And when the threads became frayed and broken, you repaired them with your blood. You know our innermost thoughts, what angers us, what brings us joy, what keeps us up at night, what drives us. Oh, to be known so perfectly and loved so deeply, in spite of what we do or do not bring to the table. You alone love us like this. Forgive us for the moments when we think we can walk this faith on our own, for the moments we hide instead of resting in your deep, reaching love. Forgive us for when we hear your voice and we pretend not to hear, for when we believe the lies of the thief instead of listening to the truth of the Good Shepherd. Lord, help us, because so often we live as though we can be snatched by your hand by the disapproval of others, by discomfort, or by the lack of control. But you, O Lord, never let us go. We cannot be stolen from your hand, not by the enemy, not by others' opinions, not even by our own idolatry. You will not let us fall far. You will not let us fall again and again. We are astounded by your incomprehensible goodness and mercy and love. May our lives be a tiny reflection of the gratitude that we have. Help us to live a life that shouts, I have a Savior, a good shepherd who loves me, and he is great. Help me to not tune out your voice amid the lies of echoes of lies that surround me. Help me to hone in on your true voice alone. And when we fall for the lies, pick us back up again and help us to start again. We will not perish because you have made it so. So help us to live a life worthy of this gift, not because we have to earn your love, but because we have already won your love. And when our faith is hanging by the last strand of the last thread, hold on to us. You never let go. Your cords bind us to you, and they are stronger than steel, and they can never be broken. We love you. Amen.